Come back to this one once the site has had time to settle in you. On the drive back to Athens, maybe, or over dinner tonight, when the broken foundations have stopped being ruins and started being a question you can't quite put down. You stood today where the ancient world came to learn how to die. You walked the ground of the Telesterion. You heard the case for what was in the cup. Now let's talk about what held, what broke, and what might still be alive. The silence is the strangest part. Not the ritual. Not the Kaikian. Not the visions. The silence. For 2,000 years, hundreds of thousands of people were initiated. The mysteries were not a small cult in a cave. They were state-sponsored religion, the most prestigious spiritual event in the Mediterranean. Every year, a fresh wave of initiates. And generation after generation, the secret held.
How?
There are three explanations, and they're not mutually exclusive. The first is fear. The penalty for revealing the mysteries was death. In 415 BCE, the Athenian general Alcibiades was accused of profaning the mysteries by performing a drunken parody at a private dinner party. Athens issued a death sentence. He fled to Sparta, then to Persia, then back to Athens, his entire biography warped by a single act of ritual transgression. The priestesses of Eleusis formally cursed him. One of them later withdrew her curse, saying she was a priestess of prayer, not of curses. That detail survived 24 centuries because the violation was that serious. The ancients didn't joke about this. You could blaspheme Zeus and people would shrug. You could question the existence of the gods, several philosophers did, and the worst you'd get was a raised eyebrow and a reputation for eccentricity. But revealing the mysteries was treated like treason. Not against a government. Against the species. The second explanation is more interesting. The experience was beyond language. You've spent hours in darkness, experiencing something your nervous system interpreted as death. Then, light. Revelation. A seeing so intense that you emerge knowing, in your body, that death is not the end. Now try to tell someone about it over dinner. You can't. Not because you've forgotten. Because the experience exists in a register that language can't reach. It's like describing color to someone who's never seen. You can use metaphor, it was like this, it felt like that, but the thing itself slips through words like water through fingers. The mysteries may have been self-protecting. The silence wasn't enforced. It was inherent. You couldn't reveal the secret because the secret wasn't information. It was transformation. And transformation doesn't transfer. The third explanation is the most provocative. Revealing the mysteries would have destroyed them. The experience depended on not knowing what was coming. The terror in the darkness worked because it was unexpected. The revelation in the light worked because it surprised. If someone had described exactly what the Hierophant revealed, exactly how the darkness would feel, the experience would have been diminished. Perhaps destroyed. Modern psychedelic therapists have rediscovered this principle. Clinicians preparing patients for psilocybin sessions deliberately avoid describing what will happen. The experience needs to be met, not anticipated. The mystery is functional. It serves the medicine. The Eleusinian priests, with 2,000 years of observational data, almost certainly understood this. The silence protected the power. The secret was kept not to hoard knowledge but to preserve its capacity to transform. Telling would have been an act of destruction, not generosity. The mysteries ended the way everything ended in the ancient world, by force. In 392 CE, the Christian emperor Theodosius I issued a decree banning pagan rituals throughout the Roman Empire. The mysteries were specifically targeted. The temples were to be closed. The rituals were to cease. The priesthood was to disband. 4 years later, in 396 CE, the Visigoths under Alaric sacked Eleusis. The sanctuary was burned. Whatever sacred objects remained were looted or destroyed. The Telesterion, already closed by imperial order, was ruined. 2,000 years of continuous practice, gone in a decade. Think about the last Hierophant. The last high priest who stood in the Anacteron and performed the revelation. He knew the tradition was ending. The emperor had declared it illegal. The army was enforcing the decree. The temples across Greece were being closed, their priesthood scattered or converted. Did he pass the secret on? To someone, somewhere, in the hope that the chain wouldn't break? Or did he let it die with him, because the mystery without the Telesterion, without the procession, without the Kaikion prepared in the right way by the right hands, the mystery alone was nothing? Like a seed without soil. We don't know. But the chain broke. Try to feel the weight of that. This was the spiritual center of gravity for the entire Greco-Roman world. And then a Christian emperor who believed he had a better answer to the question of death, resurrection through Christ rather than initiation through Demeter, decided it was over. The early church fathers understood what they were replacing. Clement of Alexandria, writing to condemn the mysteries, preserved more detail about them than any pagan source. He described the rituals in order to attack them, and in doing so, created one of our best surviving accounts. He was fighting a competitor he recognized as dangerous precisely because it was effective. The parallels are hard to ignore. Baptism, purification through water before entering sacred community. The Eucharist, a sacred drink that transforms the participant through ritual consumption. The promise of eternal life, contingent on initiation. The concept of a god who descends to the underworld and returns. Even the architecture, the basilica, designed for large congregations witnessing a central mystery, echoes the Telesterion's layout. Christianity didn't just replace the mysteries. It absorbed their structure, repurposed their emotional logic, and claimed their promises. The new religion offered what the mysteries offered, a transformed relationship with death, through faith rather than direct experience. You didn't need to walk 20 kilometers and drink the Kaikion. You needed to believe. The mysteries said, come and see. Christianity said, believe and be saved. Both worked. Only one survived. But what if the mysteries worked better? What if the reason they had to be forcibly closed, rather than simply fading away in the face of a superior alternative, is precisely that they were too effective? What if direct experience of the sacred is more powerful than faith in the sacred, and the institutional church understood that as an existential threat? The questions survived, even when the rituals didn't. Plato's allegory of the cave reads like a description of the Eleusinian experience. Prisoners in darkness, seeing only shadows. One breaks free, sees the light, returns to tell the others. They don't believe him. The story only makes full sense if Plato had been through something that matched its structure, darkness, revelation, the impossibility of communicating the experience to those who haven't had it. The Renaissance rediscovered the mysteries through Neoplatonic philosophy. Marsilio Ficino, advising the Medici, saw the Eleusinian tradition as a chain of wisdom stretching from Egypt through Greece to his own time, the perennial philosophy, the idea that all religions share a common mystical core accessible through direct experience. The Romantics were obsessed with Eleusis. Keats, Shelley, and the German idealists saw in the mysteries evidence that ancient Greece possessed a spiritual technology superior to Christian doctrine. The fascination wasn't just antiquarian. It was polemical. They were using Eleusis to argue against the church's monopoly on transcendence. And now, in our century, the circle comes back around. The psilocybin trials, the MDMA studies, the ketamine clinics, we're watching a culture cautiously rediscover something the ancient world practiced openly. The patients in those studies describe their experiences in language that echoes ancient testimony almost word for word. I understood that death is not the end. I saw something I can't describe. I lost my fear. We didn't rediscover the mysteries. But we may have rediscovered what the mysteries were doing. So what do you take away from Eleusis? The site is ruins surrounded by industry. The Telesterion is gone. The Kaikian recipe is lost. The priesthood that maintained the tradition for 2 millennia has been extinct for 16 centuries. But the question hasn't changed. Every human being who has ever lived has faced the same problem. Consciousness exists, and then it stops. What happens at the boundary? Is death a wall or a door? Is the fear of death something to be endured, or something that can be dissolved? The Eleusinian answer, whatever it was, worked. People walked to this place and walked away less afraid. They didn't believe their way through it. They experienced their way through it. And then they held the silence for the rest of their lives. Not because they were threatened. Not because they had nothing to say. Because some experiences are too real for words, and too important to cheapen with description. The drive back to Athens takes about an hour. The highway follows the sacred way. You'll cover it in 40 minutes, and the industrial suburbs will crowd in on both sides, and the modern world will feel very far from whatever happened in that darkened hall. But the question travels with you. It always has. The initiates just had a name for it, and a door to walk through. The door is gone. The question remains. History isn't what happened, it's what survived. And what survived from Eleusis isn't a fact or a doctrine or a recipe. It's a silence. 2,000 years of people who saw something, and chose, or were unable, to keep it to themselves. That silence, more than anything else that happened here, is the evidence that whatever they experienced was real.